Hi everyone and welcome. This is Seek Sustainable Japan podcast. I'm JJ Walsh, your host. This audio is from Professor Ian Davey, who is based in the Shiga area near Kyoto. And this audio comes from the Minka Summit event 2026, where Ian is talking about his different strategies that he has used in designing his house to be as low carbon and living a most sustainable life as possible. Of course, also talking about saving money. But really his target was, how can I create my house and my garden and my car to live as low carbon and sustainable as possible? Lots of great insights here. So I hope you enjoy the talk from Ian Davey.
A truly low impact house from renovating, but to be honest, the construction was much, you know, the walls were much too thin, the windows would need completely replacing the roof, and in the end we decided we have to start from scratch if you really want a fully insulated low impact house. So we took it down by hand. It took 5 weeks. Basically recycled everything. So, you know, really reusing something is the best option, but if you're running out of options, recycling to me would be the last option. But this is what we did. We kind of recycled. Technically it's a half build, so we designed it ourselves. The design started with the roof angle. It's due south. So we wanted to maximize the solar. And after having that, we then designed the rest of the house to fit this angle, literally. Passed over the design to architect who made the structural plan, and then we built it. Tried to base it on what we would call a passive house, a naturally cooled, naturally heated in the winter, but without the true passive high technology heat inverter pumps, which a passive house to be certified has to be completely sealed and tested, and no air or no heat gets in or out through this bubble, in a sense. So we created the bubble, but with lots of windows to open or close for natural heating, natural cooling. We don't have air conditioning, which is one problem with my family. But we survived. Last year was the hottest year ever in Japan. The year before that was the second hottest. So we've survived so far. Have walls, full walls. They have like half wall and in the gables, it's all open. So the heat from the stove goes up into the house, and of course the cool air in the summer gets drawn up and through the house. And we do have a base, not a basement, but we have under the house is a concrete area about this high. And it's very cool in the summer, and I'm looking at ideas to bring the air from the basement into the house, because cooling is now becoming a problem. Very traditional ways, recycled denim, wool, hemp creed, lots of different natural insulations. They were either not available, extremely expensive, or not suitable for Japan's humidity. So I did go for high-tech. This is called Super Quilt, and it's the equivalent of 29 centimeters of rock wool. Is it rock wool? The regular woolly kind of insulation. But it's very thin. So in addition to that, that's the heating insulation part. In addition, it also reflects heat, so it keeps the house cool. So it's extremely strict, you know, it's a strict insulation. Yeah, all excited. And these are the temperatures outside, and these are the temperatures inside, and these are the temperatures inside without heating. So this is in December. So of course outside temperatures are going up and down, well, down to zero, and the inside temperatures are staying relatively stable. This was measured at like 5 o'clock in the evening and like 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. So during the night, we have the stove for about 3 hours, I would say. And then the rest of the whole day is heat-free, heating-free. So yeah, it was 100% electric except for the wood stove. And the wood is all sourced from typhoon-based, you know, trees falling. We don't cut trees or purchase wood.
So what size is your PV unit?
It's 5 kilowatts. Yeah, so standard for a family of five, maybe 5 kilowatt system would be good. Again, there's a lot of research, which system is better. There's different kinds of solar PV. I chose a Canadian one, Solar Frontier, which is no carbon manufacturing, apparently. But yeah, a lot of work. So if anyone's interested in building or refurbishing a house, kind of how I do it is I research something. So I'm on Windows. This week I'm on Windows. So I research Windows, and that's all that's in my head, Windows and all the measurements of heat transfer. And I become an expert for about a week. Then I move on to wall insulation and everything about windows. I move on, and it all gets forgotten about windows. Use the yellow is what we sell, and the blue is what we produce. So we're literally selling everything we're producing, and then we're on the grid. So at night time, or if we're using during the day, at night, yeah, we draw off the grid. So, yeah, we can run through these fairly quickly, I guess. We harvest water. I attempted to start up a grey water recycling. Grey water is water from the just washing, sink, shower, bath, even washing machine is grey water. Toilet water is called black water, generally. And a simple system for passing the grey water through sand, and then it trickles out into a wetland, which is in front of our house. So I do this during the summer because the water evaporates more quickly, and there's a limit how much vegetation you have, how the area you have, and of course how much you use in the house. And of course it helps you, it kind of disciplines you to use only sort of eco-friendly detergents and soaps, etc. A lot of water. So we have a compost toilet. We do have a regular toilet upstairs. That was thanks to my wife. she lobbied for a regular toilet for guests, maybe an emergency.
My husband's the same. Not ready for the compost toilet.
Yeah. So it's working. It works. It's fine. It's good. And then this particular system, you can see, is a board system from Canada. I have made a compost toilet for a renovation. I think we will see it later. But yeah, it works really well. You can't really see clearly, but it's great. You can literally pick this up. I promise you. I promise you. You can pick it up, and yeah, it's compost.
So how does it work? Filtration, sawdust?
Absolutely, everything goes in. You're supposed to turn every day 6 times. It rarely doesn't get turned as much as it used to. And then you put in sawdust or the from rice husks, anything like that, any organic matter, dry matter. Then you reverse turn it every two or three weeks and the clear stuff comes out, and then you settle it for another maybe month, and then it's off to the gun. We don't use it on vegetables just for the feeling. We use it on the fruit trees and around the garden, but it's great. Yeah.
When you say the liquid stuff, what do you do with that?
Yeah, the liquid goes out and drains into the garden. And it's just, of course, full of nitrogen, so it's very good. I dug a 20-litre container, and it fills up every 2 weeks, and then I just take it again to the fruit trees and just spread. I love green roofs. They control water. You know, if you get a downflow, if it's from a non-green roof, if it's a regular roof, you see the flow instantly. It will fill up. Whereas from here, it will take maybe 20 minutes of heavy rain before water starts dripping, because it's just soaking up so much rain. It's really good. And it's dripping long after rain has finished. So just like a forest or a natural green area, it's controlling the flow of water. Of course, it supports biodiversity, temperature control, insulates the building. So a lot of really useful advantages from green roofs. A good thing to consider if we're renovating country houses or buildings. I got a special sedum mix. These are the waxy kind of, they're halfway between, I guess, a cactus and a regular leaf plant. So they're very drought tolerant, and the roots mat, they don't penetrate down. So they're perfect for green roofs. Unfortunately, it's kind of been overtaken by regular vegetation, but recently I'm planting thyme, which the spreading thyme, and that's pushing out now the weeds. So, and that's suitable, I think, for green roofs. So please, anyone who's interested, sun trying to penetrate, say it really does insulate. And in the winter, if it was a living building, this is my shed, then it would keep it warm as well. Yeah. This is our first car we got 20 years ago, and we run it on vegetable oil, which we collect. So this is a carbon neutral fuel source. And of course, we're recycling. We get the oil for free. There's two restaurants we get. Ohara, everyone knows, maybe Ohara, there's it's called an Inaka Kombini, like a local food place. They do a lot of tempura, so we get the oil from them. And there's a place at Hira Station, again, a very local, traditional restaurant where we get the oil. So, yeah, so I decided on, I'll show a few details. So this is basically, it is carbon neutral. We're not using fossil fuels and associated problems with fossil fuels. And all we do literally is we filter, like coffee, we filter the oil. That's the only preparation needed. So there's no chemicals, no heating, which is needed for biodiesel. So that's one reason I chose this system. Again, researching, became an expert for a week, and then moved on.
Did you build the engine yourself?
I collected, ordered all the parts, and presented them to a garage owner who was a bit, what are you talking about? What are you thinking? He had no idea. But now I would say he's probably Japan's number one expert on this system. So the system is WVO, if you would like to research. WVO is waste vegetable oil, sometimes SVO, straight vegetable oil. But this is the system of using oil rather than changing it to biodiesel, which is the other main alternative if you're using vegetable oil. The the diesel engine, if you don't want to bore you too much, the diesel engine was actually first presented at a World Trade Center by Diesel, the guy Diesel, and it was run on peanut oil. So it was actually a vegetable oil engine. Over the years, cheaper, of course, oil, regular fossil fuel oil took over, pushed out the local sources of natural oils. But not so surprising that we can do this, run an old diesel engine on vegetable oil, because that's originally what it was designed to be run on. So the main thing is that the oil is thicker than diesel. So you have to heat it, basically. That reduces the viscosity, how thick it feels, and it's able to then go into the engine and be burned. So these are the solutions, options. You can blend it, so you can have a mix of oil and, say, ethanol or biodiesel even. So you can mix it, but that will cause probably your engine to degrade over time. You can heat it. You could modify it, biofuel, or you can modify the engine. There are systems you can buy which are high tech, and it allows the engine just to take the oil as it is. But that's expensive, and if anything goes wrong, it's can be troublesome, I'd imagine. One tank or two tank, which I went with. And I'll just show you now, just briefly, the two tank system. So the criteria, it's got to be diesel, it's got to be old, basically. For me, cheap, second hand, because if it goes wrong, you don't want to waste your money. And big, so you have space for the various parts. So the parts, basically, I drew a schematic for the guy. Extra tank. That's where now the diesel goes, okay? So the main tank, regular tank, is for vegetable oil, and a 20 liter, I think it's a boat, fuel tank is for the diesel. And I'll show you why in a moment. There's a filter, extra filter to deal with the oil. Next slide. This is the heat exchanger. So this takes heat from the engine, and as the oil goes towards the engine, it's heated. That's it. So that's all we do. Why we have two tanks is we start with diesel, and then after 3 or 4 minutes, the engine is hot enough, the oil has been heated, and then we can switch over to vegetable oil drive. At the end of a journey, if you know there's an end of a journey, then you will switch back for 3 minutes just to clear out the engine, and the diesel's then waiting in the engine to start from cold.
That's it.
I'm sure it's not. It's vegetable.
But they're also collecting oil.
That's right. Yeah, it will be based on algae. I think is the aim, but eventually, but they have to scale up, of course. So
they're also using clothing. I interviewed a guy.
Yeah, just an extra clothing. So the idea, I think there's one more. Sorry. The idea was carbon. Okay, reducing carbon footprint. And basically, dairy, animal-based products are have the highest footprints. So having animals was important. I don't eat meat from shops anyway, but we do eat chicken and, sometimes goat. So we figured milk, eggs, some meat would reduce our carbon footprint substantially. And of course, the other one is fruit, and we've been planting a lot of fruit trees recently.
So is the dairy also from your goat?
Yes. Yeah, we got a good system. We put the goat into kidding. We refresh the goats roughly each year, so they have kids, babies. That gives us milk. It could give us milk for up to 18 months if we pushed it, but we don't, because it takes a lot out of the goats. They're changing their blood into milk, literally. So it takes a lot out of their bodies. So we use the milk and store it, freeze it, until about December or January, and then the other goat will come into, will kid the next May. And between December and May, we're maybe using frozen milk. So it's all about timing and preparation. So we're 100%, yeah, milk.
Can you talk about ethical slaughter a little bit? No. I know it's dark, but if you're killing your own.
Yeah, if we have boy goats, unfortunately, we need to just take care of them. And recently we found some restaurants which do halal, which I looked at. And, well, yeah, we supply them with goats. But I think, as most of you would agree, if we're going to eat meat, we should be prepared for the realities of, what goes on. Life and death cycle.
How did you learn how to more ethically, like you said, you will.
Yeah, well, I do chickens. I can deal with very easily. We regularly have to dispatch chickens, so that's not at all a problem for me now. I lay them down, their heads covered, they're very calm, and then it's very quick. If you want to go to the details, I feel this system is. It's too physical and not 100% sure. You just don't know what's happened. But, if the head is taken off, it's you're sure that whatever's happening with their body, moving around, they are dead. They have no head. So they really hard. Any beekeepers here? Extremely difficult. They're amazing animals, but they're hard to keep alive for whatever reason. And there's no definitive answers on the internet. If you look at any problem, you get such a variety of answers. I've never come across a topic which was so kind of difficult to deal with. I'd love to become a beekeeper. But anyway, we're lucky now. We have a very good beekeeper who keeps 3 or 4 hives on our orchard. So we're very lucky, yes. Unfortunately, it's imported from Australia. I haven't found a Japanese, we use alfalfa nuts and hay, which is actually straw. It's not hay. But not much, we're lucky. They're outside maybe 90% of the year. So they're only in shelter in really cold or snow. I think it's really only snow which will stop them from going outside. Oops. So I literally have 1 kilometer of pasture which is enclosed, really well enclosed, like this high, which we are able to use. And that gives them shelter from heat and rain. So we use this strip graze, they're moved, and then the field will have grown up and we put them in the field. We also chain them and move them on wasteland. There's a lot of empty rice fields, which we move them around. That they're drinking goat milk, but if you tell them, they think, oh, really? Or this, they always smell. But if you don't tell them, they don't notice. But I think the bad image of goat milk may come from artificial feeding, possibly. Mm. I don't know. But ours have a very natural, and the milk is really neutral, but it's just fresh milk. Variety, recently pomegranates, and this year gooseberries. Mm. Don't know gooseberries in Japanese, sorry. Gooseberries. And we're going back to raspberries. When I first started raspberries, I didn't know the difference between the two types, and in terms of how you have to prune them. So I made many mistakes, and they kind of, I lost those. But now I kind of know what I'm doing. I'm reintroducing. Because these are very healthy, high-value crops and don't take much maintenance. You know, all perennials. I love perennials. So we have blackberries, we have gooseberries, mulberries, a lot of berries, actually. Gumi, biwa, yeah, we have a lot of.
Did you start it from seed or small plants?
Mostly small plants, some cuttings, yeah. Mulberry cuttings, gumi from cuttings. These are really good, like willow. They really grow very easily from just stalks. Yeah, so easy to grow, and you have a lifelong supply of seeds and sponges. Very, very, very good. And we eat them now as well, which I guess you're supposed to anyway. So you eat them when they're heavy, green, and then if you wait long enough, they become sponge. Wonderful. Shop. Marmalade to a local shop. Yeah, so we do, yeah.
Any online sales anyone can buy? No.
Yeah. So they're just agitating.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. So in line with this summit, I thought I would introduce a little bit about the farmhouses we're doing. We've been lucky enough to have two of these style houses. This is the latest one we managed to get. And we've been renovating this. This is up in Shishige, Kuladani village. And this house came with the land. So now it's a lot of work, just cutting. And one area we're actually putting back to trees, because for me, I know we can't make that much area productive. So I'm thinking of oak, maybe for harvest, you know. But again, deer are a problem and monkeys are a problem. So if you can get the trees to a certain height, then maybe okay. Just regular tatami. Most of it was rotten. And we decided to basically gut it, unfortunately, because a lot of it was collapsed. This is all new, you can see. And this is now an open area, so living space. It's not a place. These houses are not a place to renovate to a high standard of insulation. It's almost impossible. There's air going in through. You know, they need air ventilation, lots of windows, so they rely on that. So for summertime, extremely effective. You know, no air conditioning at all. But in the winter, that's the problem. If you want to live comfortably, this kind of house is very difficult to bring up to a comfortable level of insulation without using huge amounts of energy, I think, heating. So I kind of have an idea. Everyone keeps asking, what are you going to do with this? What are you going to do? My idea for the maybe medium long term would be live here and next door build a very small, compact eco house, extremely insulated for the winter, like a bolt hole, and you live there in the winter, and then this is the regular house. So that's one alternative if you can able to do that space wise and etc. So build a very small, tiny, compact eco house, extremely well insulated, maybe with a stove for the winter, and then during the rest of the year, spring, summer, autumn, live in the spacious house. So if people are thinking about, you know, how do we make this survivable in the winter, maybe that's one option. Farm building we saved, it was again, couldn't see it. The roof had collapsed actually, but luckily it was a hole, so the water came straight down through the first floor, second floor. So it didn't spread, so it was limited. So we were luckily able to save it. And this is now kind of our family, friends, almost like a glamping existence. So it has a small kitchen, solar water heater, compost toilet. So it's a very good use of a traditional farm building properly. He put on extra batteries, new set of, the old is still there. Everything is there. We just put a new batten on, got it all straight, which I, you know, that's important, of course. And then we just screw them on. So yeah, there's a board, and then there's a thin piece on top to seal that goes on where they join. The other side I did on the cheap. This part was okay. So I pulled it off, pulled it away. I put the, what do you call it, drainage strip, the rainwater strip here. And then I fixed the new stuff, just this part. So this is old, around the corner is old, but I painted, I stained it, and it doesn't look any different. So, but I think probably in maybe 10 years I'll need to change that.